anyone who hasn't seen my interview with Celeste Solom last week, please, please go to Z Media, go to the interviews page, watch it from start to finish. Take your time, absorb the information. It's going to sound out there, but then you're going to watch this interview with Shimon Janowitz, or, you know, watch that interview after you've seen this, and everything will start to make sense to you, including the nanotech, the injections, the push for it, the synthetic biology. Everything will make sense in light of what they say about human 2.0. People, as I said in the promotional video for today's segment, we are onto something. And there's a reason why so many doctors are in complete denial about this. This is the key to the entire agenda. We'll be back with Shimon and his findings right after this short break and a word from our sponsors. This broadcast is brought to you by sponsors of the Stu Peters Network, Bioptimizers. Would you like to dramatically improve the quality of your sleep? Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia, experience muscle cramps or twitches? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common. 4 out of 5 Americans are magnesium deficient, and almost everyone is at suboptimal levels. And that's a big problem because magnesium is actually involved in more than 600 biochemical reactions in your body. Now, just taking any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't actually use or absorb. That's why this broadcast exclusively recommends Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. When you get all 7 critical forms of magnesium, pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded, from your brain to your sleep, pain and inflammation, and, of course, less stress. Visit the link in the description below and enter code MARIA to get a whopping 25% off any order and support your body while supporting businesses that keep independent media going and who actually care about your health. We're joined now by Shimon Janowitz, who honestly is a hero of this age. He's an amazing man. He's dedicating his life to exposing topics that many people don't want to touch. And he's been doing so much research on this. We're very, very grateful for him. Shimon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure as always, Maria.
Now, I conducted an interview last week. For anyone who hasn't seen it, please go and watch it. It's on zmedia.com on the interviews page. That interview was with Celeste Solom, one of the most important interviews I've conducted to date. So we're now exploring these topics of nanotech meeting synthetic biology. You said to me that you had some of your thoughts as well, Shimon, and I'm very interested to hear what you've found, some new things that you've found, and really just continue this conversation because it's so important for people to explore this further.
Yeah, it is. It's important for people to explore this, and many people are experiencing this firsthand because they get sick somehow, and I'm sure they would love to know what's ailing them.
Yes.
You know, you and I have been discussing a lot of findings of the nanotechnology that's in the COVID-19 injections. We now know that they're putting it everywhere, maybe other kinds of injections. Devoted a lot of time to researching creation of things like electronic circuitry and structures in the blood that we see with our microscopy work, and we had to face some tough opposition of people saying there's no such thing at all. Clearly there is. But I've been thinking for quite a while about the question of, okay, so we have computer chips, so people are emitting MAC addresses as Bluetooth signals, and we see all kinds of things in the blood that shouldn't be there. But what's killing people in such a way, in died suddenly and in heart attacks and or heart failures or neurological damage? And what's with the strange clots that embalmers such as Richard Hirschman have been finding? What's causing all of this? So last time we met, we talked about the toxicity in the vials. I showed some papers and some findings that show that this is really toxic stuff, and it's toxic in many ways, you know. In addition to this died suddenly phenomena, and people, you know, going to sleep and sometimes maybe not simply not waking up, there is immense increase in cases of cancer. In fact, it's called now turbo cancer, and some people have suddenly more than one type of cancer attacking them. And if you ask me personally, I've been very ill for a while, and I'm not jabbed. So we also discussed the transmissibility of this toxicity between people, and clearly there is something like that. And what's interesting is that in nature we don't have infectious diseases. This is an urban myth, right? Maybe there is someone in the United States who is in charge of a department called Office for Allergies and Infectious Diseases. Allergies exist. Infectious diseases do not exist, not in nature. So this is a common myth. And my friend, Dr. Tom Cowan, he wrote an entire book called The Contagion Myth. And in this book, he describes why things that appear to be contagion are not contagion at all. So why are we having this? And maybe I would start by showing you something by Johns Hopkins University. It's a very important document. I think they completed it in, I think, maybe 2018. So before COVID. And we should all remember that, especially in the new millennium, we've seen a surge in what's called flu cases, right? Flu used to be, I remember, I'm rather, you know, of age. I remember flu when I was little, and flu used to be something that you had for 2 days, and then, you know, it passed away and you continued with your life. Not anymore. So flu cases have become very intense. And I've been researching what's going on in the world for a long time, you know, and I think you touched on many of the things in your brilliant interview with Celeste Saloum. We know we are being sprayed. And we know they want to put to blame anything unusual on some kind of fictitious virus. What are they doing to us? So it was clear to me that spraying, you know, high altitude or stratospheric aerosol injection, which they claim is for the benefit of humanity because it protects us from the sun, God forbid. And the sun is too hot, and there's global warming, and we need to do something. Unbelievable.
Once global warming was disproven, then they just called it climate change, which is the most ridiculous term, because the climate has been changing since the dawn of creation. I mean, this is. Oh, I'm so glad, Shimon, that you see this for how ridiculous it all is, because that's really what it is. You'd have to be a fool to believe this.
Yes, and we've all noticed how the COVID pandemic narrative has ended abruptly, and we immediately changed gears, and now we are now talking about global warming and how dangerous this is. So I don't think the global warming is dangerous, but spraying can definitely be dangerous. But I could not notice that it wasn't until they actually started injecting people with stuff that things really, really got bad. So I have some thoughts of that I could share with you. What was this spraying, or what may have preceded the COVID pandemic, and why this is all becoming a lot more serious once they started injecting billions of people with these toxic clot shots, or whatever we want to call them.
Fantastic. I can't wait to hear your analysis. We'll get straight into your presentation and we'll go from there.
So I want to start by emphasizing, you know, the fact that we don't have viruses nor contagion in nature, right? We have bacteria, we have fungi, we have maybe some stinging insects, we have parasites. No viruses has ever been proven to exist nor cause any disease. And I mentioned the common cold. You know, they want us to believe that even the common cold is a virus. And you know, old people knew, and I think we also know, common colds are caused by not keeping warm enough in the cold. That's the common cold. You're in a cold weather, maybe you don't wear enough clothes, and then you get cold, and then the body responds and reacts, and then you start coughing and sneezing, and you have runny noses and so on. This is the common cold. It's not a virus. Okay, so since there is no contagion in nature, and I was referring to the book of my friend, Dr. Tom Cowan, called The Contagion Myth. He explains that there is no contagion. And I did personal research and video on the Spanish flu of 1918-19, showing that this Spanish flu, it was not Spanish, it was not a flu. It was simply a disaster, maybe a small genocide, small in double quotes, brought about by toxic injections.
Yes.
That were then given to, initially to United States military personnel that were about to be sent to Europe to the ending Great War, as it was then later rebranded as the First World War.
So, yes, I interviewed Dr. Andrew Kaufman on this subject, so he's spoken about this in great detail. And, you know, sometimes people criticize me because I still talk about things like viruses and all of that. Well, I wasn't completely satisfied all of my questions were answered in that interview, so I obviously want to keep learning more.
All right. Okay. So Andy Kaufman is also a good friend of mine. Let's start by this, because I was actually discussing this with Andy Kaufman. This is can you see this? This is a paper from Nature magazine.
Yes.
And it's from 2006. And so what I want to show you here is that they have been researching poisoning us with bacteria for a long time. And so, you know, even bacteria are not pathogens, but they work very hard at trying to create pathogens. And I think the best tool that they have are bacteria, because this is what I want to show here, because bacteria are amenable to genetic modification, in particular insertions of something called plasmids, which is a genetic component in bacteria that can change what proteins bacteria make. And if you change, modify bacteria to start producing or expressing toxic proteins, then these bacteria will produce toxic proteins. And you can even modify bacteria to produce something which is positive, like maybe insulin to help people with diabetes. So this, I think, this is a very important review paper from Nature magazine. I think it was written in 2005 and published in 2006. And it reviews bacteria in gene therapy, bactofection versus alternative gene therapy. And this is a very interesting title. So basically, bactofection meaning is, what is meant by this is transferring some genetic payload to victims, right? This is bactofection. They describe what bactofection is. The technique of using bacteria for direct gene transfer into the target organism. Target organism, mostly meaning humans, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But in addition to delivering a target payload, I want to show you this chart, this nice chart. So figure one describes this so-called bactofection. So you have basically here A is a bacterium, right? And in this bacterium, you have the bacteria own genetic material. And these three circles here are three plasmids. Plasmids are basically round-shaped DNA chunks that are typical of bacteria. So they are found mostly in bacteria, and or only in bacteria. And the what this allows them to do is basically instruct the bacteria to start producing new proteins that the bacteria would not otherwise manufacture. So in this model, figure one, you have the bacteria, and the bacteria, they're specifically selecting bacteria that are not pathogens. The bacteria would not cause any disease themselves. And then in B, here is the bacterium penetrates a human host cell. And in C, it undergoes some lysis, so the body of the bacteria is destroyed, leaving only these three plasmids.
Yes.
So plasmids are cyclic DNA chunks typical of bacteria. And in some miraculous way, in D here, the plasmids enter the genome of the, or the nucleus of the host cell, and they integrate into the genome, and then they make some genetic modification, which is the desired effect. However, if you look at figure two here, there is another model. And the other model, I think they call it in situ expression. and in this model, the bacteria do not enter the host cell. They remain in the interstitial fluid, you know, between the cells. And this is what you see here. Again, the same bacterium A as in figure one, and with, in this case, three plasmids added. And in here, you can see that the bacteria remain outside of the cell, but they start expressing these proteins, these folding entities.
So what does that mean in practice?
What does that mean is that if they want to poison people, all they need to do is launch spray aerosolized bacteria that have been genetically modified to manufacture some kind of toxic protein.
Right.
And these bacteria would penetrate the body and will start expressing this toxic protein. Now, toxic proteins, why proteins? Because this is what bacteria cells do. You know, they make proteins. And the interesting thing about bacteria is, unlike humans, bacteria have only one cell type. Unlike us humans, we have many cell types. So, for example, our fingers can express proteins, a protein called keratin that's responsible for the fingernails. No other part in the body can express fingernails, right? It's only fingers that express fingernails. Similarly, hair, also keratin. I think that the idea that I want to describe here, that they have been lying to us for a long time, saying that, you know, all cells in human body or any high-level organism carry the same genetic material and express the same genetic material, which is a fallacy.
Right.
Obviously, our eyes, our you know, hearts, our kidneys, our skin, they all express different proteins. They do not behave similarly. Whereas bacteria, they're just one cell. They always do the same thing. Unless they undergo some mutation. So basically, what this paper describes is that they have been working hard for, you know, more than two decades now, I think much more than that, on using bacteria to deliver some kind of toxic proteins to humans.
Right.
Right? Now, theoretically, this could be good, you know, if you deliver proteins, as they say, for humans to develop antibodies against them, then, you know, maybe you could confer some immunity. But no, this is not how it works. We've all been seeing now in the past 3 years what immunity really is. Immunity means making people sick and killing them. This
yes.
is what immunity
yes.
is. Because if you encounter a toxin, you don't want immunity. You just don't want this toxin in your body. And I want to go on and show you. They have been studying quite a few of these bacteria. Here is a whole list of bacteria that they have been studying. Right? So... basically, you start thinking maybe bacteria are the basic protein synthesis element in nature. Maybe us humans aren't, you know, because we now know that there is something called the microbiome, which is the bacteria living within us, and they outnumber our own cells. So bacteria are very capable in producing proteins, and you can even modify them. And another thing I want to here is another list. What's the difference? This is disease models and more bacteria. And please note, in particular,
E. coli.
E. coli.
Yes, because they've been finding that. Even Todd Callender and Lisa McGee spoke about that. How they're really using E. coli. I think Dr. Stephanie Seneff discussed E. coli as well. She comes obviously from a completely different perspective. She's an MIT senior researcher, but she's been looking into the E. coli as well. And then, of course, you have you know, all of these you know, various fungi and things that have been
yeah.
used to deliver the gene therapy.
Right, so E. coli is a great favorite of theirs, and I'll show you a lot more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just to show you this, there is a comparison table.
Right.
Here, table number one. It's a comparison of main vectors for doing this. transfection. This is the name given to, you know, delivering some foreign genetic
Oh, so
material into your own.
bacterial vectors are the most effective where it comes to low production costs, simple production, simple delivery, and amount of delivered DNA, but the safety and efficiency is minimal. So that sounds exactly like what path they've pursued, Shimon.
Absolutely. You are amazing. You know, just one look at this and you understood everything. By far the most convenient way to do and unsafe way to do this is through bacteria. Now,
Yes.
so I was having this discussion with Dr. Andy Kaufman, I think 2 years ago when I first showed him this paper, because I thought, you know, there was COVID and it was before the injections. And people really, some people really got sick, although we know that in some cases people didn't get sick. They suffered from what's called pre-existing conditions, and you know the death certificates were manipulated, or people were unnecessarily put on ventilators,
Yes.
and giving, you know, drugs like midazolam to sedate them so heavily that they wouldn't wake up at all. And later been injecting with something called remdesivir, which is one of their favorite injections for killing people on the ventilator. Anyway, so what Andy Kaufman told me at that time was that this would not make actually a very successful poisoning system. And indeed, we have clues that this was not satisfactory because they could have continued with this if this was indeed what they have been using.
True.
But instead, they switched to the COVID injections. Now, why is there a problem with this? Because, unlike ev like sorry, like every living organism, the organism has a will of its own, right? So once you insert these plasmids into the bacterium and you release them, so let's say by spraying, and I want to suggest, Maria, that every single flu epidemic or any other epidemic that we've been having, mostly after the year 2000, you know, there was SARS version one of SARS, and there was MERS, and there were chickenpox and swine flu. Every single one of these was in fact a result of some spraying of toxins upon us, as is still going on today. So the reason this is not working very well is because once you modify the bacteria, but you release them to nature, they develop, you know, a will and behavior of their own. They could mutate. They could stop being or change the plasmids that are embedded in them, and or stop being mediators or successful mediators of what you originally intended for them to do. And indeed, this is exactly what we saw in what's called COVID. There was maybe some ailment sometime somewhere, but wasn't very consistent and very quickly died out until the injections arrived. So
Yes.
just I'm
And
showing
people
this
are
because
much
I want.
sicker now, by the way. So people
Oh.
were, at the start, people were afraid. So, if they have a sniffle, they think they're going to die and they need to go to hospital on a ventilator, which is going to kill them. They, or remdesivir is going to kill them, whatever. The hospital killed them. And so, then. But were people actually sick is the question. I mean, I know at the very start I felt quite unwell. I was at home and I had some chicken soup and some Panadol, and in a few days I was good to go, so I think that were people really all that sick? No, I think they were just more fearful than anything. That the signs of any signs of, a sniffle, they would have been terrified. And now they've become far more sick after getting these death shots.
Yeah, and I would try to explain what's causing this and why people are dying in their millions now, and people are getting injured in their billions due to these extremely toxic injections. So whatever, you know, we always talk, and you also discussed with Celeste Saloum in your interview, what portion of what's happening is due to spraying. So I think a lot needs to be said about spraying. It's clearly unhealthy, but there's nothing like, you know, the good old needle prick and the direct injection
of course. And it's far more, it enters the bloodstream instantly, whereas when we're breathing it in, it takes some time. So, you know, it's not as effective as directly injecting you with their death poison. Death
right.
poison, there's a new one.
Death poison, yes. So we also discussed the toxicity of the delivery system. Mm-hmm. This paper that I showed last time discusses the lipid nanoparticles that are touted to be in those injections, and it says that this delivery system in itself is toxic.
Yes.
And after our last interview, I met this nice gentleman. His name is Dr. Gabriele Segala, mm-hmm. and he has presented he has an amazing presentation that shows really how toxic these lipids are. Not all, there are, according to the official narrative, there are four lipids that create this lipid nanoparticles. One of them is called a cationic lipid. Cationic means that it is positively charged. Basically, it has excess protons, and we know that protons are very toxic. But this did not solve the puzzle completely for me, because, you know, all people are exposed to the lipid nanoparticles or the lipids, but not all develop severe symptoms immediately. And why do some people pass on and die suddenly or otherwise, like almost a year or even more after
more.
Being injected?
Yes, some more.
Yeah, some more. So this does not correspond to the model of the lipids as being the major toxicity in these injections. I wanted to explore more.
Sure.
This is something that I think is very important to discuss. This is, do you know the thing that calls itself Johns Hopkins University? They were one of the three participants in Event 201.
Yes.
Together with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Economic Forum, which is headed by Klaus Schwab, they did this tabletop exercise called Event 201 in I think it was 2019, just a month or so before
yes,
the
right
outbreak
before
of
COVID. They've
yeah,
conducted
so they,
another one, by the way, catastrophic contagion. They say it's going to kill a bunch of kids. So, you know, that's their next plan, to kill off the children. Technologies to address.
To address global catastrophic biological risks. And one of the... this is so ironic. So one of the ways to address biological risks is to create them self-spreading vaccines. So what are self-spreading vaccines? And this is amazing. You know, these are the same people that have been lying to us all along that, you know, that there is something called vaccines with attenuated viruses.
Yes.
Attenuated viruses are viruses that are allegedly not killed to keep them alive, to keep them to maintain motility so that they can spread the immunity.
Yes.
And here there is an actual admission that this is not working. Why? Because they say that there is a need to develop. Why would you need to develop something that you already have? The reason is you don't actually have it. You don't have viruses, you don't have vaccines, you just have, you know, crude toxicity injectors, and you want to make them more elaborate. So by self-spreading vaccines...
Can we be clear here? The toxicity injections that they're giving are spreading. They do spread. Shedding is real, correct?
Not only is it real, but they have declared, and this document is from 2018, so mm-hmm. 1 year prior to event 201, that this is something that they want to develop.
Yes.
Right? Self-spreading. And the sinister target here is that you only need to inject with these toxins or with these vaccines a certain portion of the population, and then just, you know, open the lockdowns and people would mingle and they would be communicating this immunity. They're genetically engineered to move through populations like communicable disease, right? Oh. This is what it says here. Mm-hmm. So you can easily see that if this falls into the wrong hands, this would be a communicable disease. And this has been, you know, a wet dream of theirs to create, and I've been saying this to Tom Cohen, the author of the book Contagion Myth, no contagion, but they would very much like to create one with their synthetic biology. And this is where nanotechnology meets synthetic biology. Yes. Stuff, as I'm going to show you. So one of their wet dreams was to create contagion in a world where there's no contagion, and they can do this by self-spreading vaccines. Yes. So I want to take you down. So they released us a number of other nice and interesting technologies, such as ingestible bacteria for vaccination, mm-hmm. or self-amplifying. So here they list robotics for telehealth. So mm-hmm. Maybe you don't need to meet your doctor anymore. Maybe robots can do anything remotely. You just go to a robotic center and get your spine operated on by a robot.
This is what they did during COVID, Shimon. They didn't let people go to the medical centers. They encouraged telehealth appointments, which got people used to talking to a health professional online. Now over the phone. Now they're saying, doctors, AI is going to do a better job than your doctor. So all these doctors that thought, I'm raking it in, injecting all these people with this COVID shot, are going to be obliterated and replaced with AI. So I hope you enjoy your paycheck, you bloody murderers, because, you're not going to be earning it much longer. You're going to be replaced by robotics, just like everyone else, just like lawyers that defended, the courts, the judges, everyone. Policemen. Yes, but we've got robo dogs for the policemen, so you're not needed now either. All of you are going to be just discarded by Noah Harari, who says that the population's just going to become so useless and their lives are going to be so meaningless that we're just going to have to drug them to keep them occupied. Well done, murdering doctors and murdering police officers and all of you who complied. You're the reason we're here. Right. I had to get that action
on. Feel free to do that. You're doing that so remarkably well. And I don't know how things are in Australia, but here in Israel, they're still encouraging people to, you know, to speak to their doctor on the phone, if at all. And sometimes, if I am asking my doctor, look, I don't want to say I've been poisoned. So I say, I have long COVID. What can you do? We don't know how to treat that.
Yeah.
We don't know this condition at all, or we do know it, but we have no treatment for it.
Well, I was just speaking to someone this week about this, Shimon, and I said they're using long COVID to cover up all of the sickness that people are now getting from the shedding, the poison in the skies, the poison in the food, the poison in the water, and it just so happens that COVID symptoms match radiation poisoning. We're being hit with this EMF, plus with, you know, all these frequencies reacting to what's being put in our bodies. It's no wonder people are sick, and we'll just keep calling it long COVID and say, we have to establish research facilities. Have you seen what they proposed in the United Kingdom for long COVID? They want them going into the this long COVID center, putting VR goggles in, getting them in the metaverse so they can pretend to play golf because graded exercise is going to help them. I mean, you know, you're proposing a fake reality to get them out of this hell that these people are living in so they can pretend to play golf to feel better for a minute. That's their proposition. Really? The same people wanting us to live in the metaverse? Come on. We can see this for what it is, Shimon.
Right. So as an expert on 5G and in general, electromagnetic radiation in general, 5G in particular, I have a slightly different view. I think there's nothing like a good old toxin or poison or venom. And as we've discussed previously, these work in tandem with electromagnetic radiation for the energizing the self-assembly of the nanotechnology and maybe opening up the capsules and releasing toxin. What I want to show you, and let me just finish with this, is a lot more groundbreaking.
So,
electromagnetic radiation makes people sick, but toxins make them even sicker, and toxins kill people instantly as opposed to electromagnetic radiation. You know that if you don't scream in pain because this is cooking you from within, then it could take a while before it does something bad to you. So this is a research from Denmark, and what I want to show is this chart here. And what this chart shows, figure one, this axis here is the number of adverse events. And this is the BioNTech, in other words, the Pfizer number of doses per batch, right? So what this paper shows, it's now a peer-reviewed paper, is that basically the batches of at least the Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 injectables, the batches are divided to three groups actually. And this yellow one, you see there are many, it could be many doses per batch, but roughly zero adverse events per batch. So I would call these maybe chip only batches, no toxins. There could still be electronic circuitry, but for other purposes, not for causing injury and death. And then the green type batches are what I would call medium toxicity batches. And then the number of adverse events rises as you dispense more of these according to this linear regression line.
Yes.
So these batches are a bit toxic. They can cause injury and maybe even death. But, you know, in a moderate way than this blue line here.
Yes.
The blue line here is what I would call maximum toxicity batches. So there are these some lucky people who, according to this model of the Johns Hopkins University, these are the lucky ones who are privileged to get the toxicity and communicate it to other people. So this is interesting because we know that some people are being jabbed and do not complain much. Some people complain a lot, and some people just go and die suddenly on us. And this is not good at all, but this is an explanation. But the worrying thing...
Well, what you're showing is interesting, Shimon, because this is something that Dr. Yeadon was saying in the early days, and they were looking at, They were analyzing OpenVAERS data, for example, that was showing that some batches were responsible for all the deaths, some were responsible for disability, and then some seemed to be placebos, perhaps. And what this is actually a study confirming that to be the case. A small number of the batches are responsible for most of the death and injuries. And that is on purpose because they knew, based on the OpenVAERS data very early on, that some batches were causing this, and yet they deployed those batches. They continued to deploy them.
Exactly. So this has been done before, as you said. It has been done by Craig Pradecooper. Pradecooper, I hope I'm pronouncing
It's
his
okay.
surname correctly. So Craig Pradecooper has a website called How Bad Is My Batch?
Yes.
I was introduced to his work by Sasha Latipova, and this is actually so anyone with a batch number can go to that or to the US VAERS system and just look to see how bad that batch is.
Yes. So you've got some different images to the ones that you've shown us in the past, Shimon. You'd like to show more evidence of what you've been finding?
Basically, I came to the conclusion that what they're doing is they're using synthetic biology in a very special way that I'm going to describe to create toxins within people.
Okay.
And
Well, I want to see that.
so it's not just toxins, it would be proteins in general. And I want to start by describing the fallacy of the current narrative, which is called mRNA spike protein narrative, right? So according to this narrative, they insert one specific genetic sequence, which they call the mRNA. So it's basically RNA with an M as a prefix. Obviously, this is nonsense. Why is it nonsense? Because they're claiming that they're injecting this, transfecting human cells, and these human cells then start producing something that is called the spike protein, which is a toxin. But this toxin belongs to the virus, which is called SARS-CoV-2, which attacked us earlier on. And this toxin, when injected to people, would make the body create antibodies for this spike protein and confer immunity. And the reason why I say that this is a blunt lie is never, never in history have they ever been able to inject something called mRNA to human cells and make them produce the spike protein or any other protein. Yes, they could mess with our genome. They could transfect the genetic material inside of us, which we don't understand well. But we do understand that our genetic material is very different to the one of bacteria, as I described, because bacteria are always a single cell organism and they are all the same. Whereas we, as human beings, we are not all the same. Our eyes and noses and fingers, they are not the same organ. They don't contain the same genetic information, right? And because if they did, and if their model was true, then all our cells, which allegedly contain the same genetic information, would express the same proteins. Because what is genetic information? Genes. Genes are basically, it's just a code that encodes for a specific protein. This is what genes are. And there was a, if you recall, a Human Genome Project that found that we humans have a very low number of genes, maybe 20,000 genes, whereas an apple has almost 60,000 genes. So any apple, and I think in fact any bacteria can produce a lot more proteins than any human can. And in humans, we have different cells expressing different proteins. So our eyes, express the color of the iris, and we have hair color and skin color. Not many proteins, but clearly the skin and the eyes are not the same. The fact is that they have not been very successful at manipulating human cells to make them to express proteins to their liking.
So in comes
Whereas,
synthetic biology.
exactly, here comes E. coli to the rescue, and I've
Well,
showed you already.
let's go through what other evidence you have, Shimon. We're I think maybe even over the hour right now, so we have to get to that. I'm really interested to see what you show.
Right, so I was looking at my own blood and some blood of others along with my colleagues, and this is my blood, right? So you can see that most apparent thing here is the nanotechnology fiber that you see here, but and the blood itself, these are the red blood cells here. They are stacked up in rouleau formations. That means that the blood is very, very unhappy, very ill. And but what I noticed was that some of these structures tended to bubble. Maybe this doesn't show this very well. So here is another one.
Well,
And
hang on, Shimon, I want to ask you, when did you start looking at your blood? And when did this start showing up in your blood?
okay, so I was very ill when I attended some conference of activists in Israel, probably been poisoned. I can't prove it, but it happened overnight. I became very, very ill and almost died. That was in October 2021.
You're not
Right,
the first
so
person
maybe.
that I've heard that this has happened to. In fact, I know one particular protest. I was not present at this one protest. Many people that I know that went there got very, very ill, started displaying symptoms of what would typically be called COVID. One of them still has a cough to this day. It's been over a year.
Yeah.
You're not the first person that's told me that, Shimon.
So I know because I'm in contact with many people who are sick around the world, and I'm struggling with this. So we don't have yet all the answers. But what I can say is basically this is this is what long COVID is all about. You suffered some toxicity, and as a result, maybe you developed some nanotechnology structures and tissue damage. Because what do toxins do? They damage tissue, and it could be brain tissue, heart tissue, other tissues. So there are sometimes grief symptoms of this. So this was in October 2021. At the time, I was also already working with some international groups, and we were looking at the blood of injected people, jabbed people, and we saw these structures in them. What we didn't look at was the blood of unjabbed people like me. So back then, I obtained a microscope, and I think I was the first one in the world to start looking at the blood of unjabbed people. And what I was seeing is that these structures, these nanotechnology structures, and this horrible rouleau formations in the blood started appearing in unjabbed people that became maybe. I wasn't ill at all in 2020. So only quite a few months after the injection campaign in Israel, which started exactly January the 1st, 2021, only 8 months later did I become very ill.
And have
So I
you got
don't know, maybe.
persisting systems, sorry, symptoms, Shimon? What are the persisting symptoms, if you don't mind talking about them?
Okay, so this respiratory, right? What is SARS? It's a severe acute respiratory syndrome, right? I don't have any respiratory problems. but I do have low reduced blood oxygenation, and you can see that this blood cannot transmit oxygen very well. And
Yes.
in addition to that, these structures inside the blood, impede the blood flow. This is very unhealthy. So we have reduced oxygenation, and it's easy to test this using a pulse oximeter. And the one thing I knew is I should not go to any hospital, although I was dying, because I decided if I would to die, I would die at home happily without being poked with needles with remdesivir or ventilators or any other thing. So gladly, I found some formula that was able to counter the toxins, but at a price. And I still have long haul symptoms. But then I also, as you know, Maria, I continued to do some testing of the
Yes.
injectables, and I happened to stumble across one of the or two of the more toxic vials, and I got poisoned yet again. This time it was my fault because maybe I shouldn't have fiddled with this.
You were trying to help humanity, and I remember it hurt you had a problem with your eye after that, and it's unbelievable.
So not only I showed you papers, other people in the world,
Yes.
just there was a location in Thailand where a vial just dropped and snapped on the floor in a
Yes.
vaccination center, and the entire building was infected. Okay, this is more from my blood. So you can see that some of these fibers or filaments or how we would call them, they look different than the others, and I started to see bubbling. This is a typical rouleau formation, which is when the red blood cells, they are still alive, but they stack up in these sausage-like structures called rouleau, and
Yes.
this is not very, very healthy. This is another thing that's common, and this is a biofilm. Basically, this could be fungi that infiltrated the blood, and this is part of symptoms that we also see. And here you can see some white blood cells, neutrophils that are trying to attack this but are
Yes.
not very successful. And here is the interesting bit. So in the middle of my blood, I saw these puddles of black matter. So what is this puddle doing in my blood? And you can see that this is not an air bubble, because here some courageous red and white blood cells
Courageous.
try to. So it occurred to me that this is a puddle of some toxin.
Right.
This is what it is, right? So this is toxin in the blood, and all the red blood cells are near it are trying to get away, and are not doing very well. And so this, I don't know what this is, but again, this still there's some bubbling, but this is looks too bright to me. So let's move on to another image, and here I can show you more clearly where the bubbling occurs. Do you see this?
Yes.
This is something which is clearly not a red. This is a red blood cell, right? So a red blood cell is typically between 6 and 8 microns in size, and I could see bubbling that is smaller. And I was, just trying to understand what's going on here. Why is this bubbling? These are the same filaments and worms that we're seeing in blood, and I've been growing them on my microscope glass slide, and again, I noticed how they assemble. They assemble from a hydrogel with and being energized by electromagnetic radiation, but I could also see that there could be some ejection of matter from the structures, as you see here. And so this got me curious, and suddenly it landed on me that some of the vials actually manufacture, because of the things that are bubbling here, Here's another, here's a structure. This was, I didn't pay attention to this initially, but this is, you see some very thick membrane, and you can see drops bubbling out of it. And so this to me looked like a factory for proteins.
Right.
Now, going back to the fallacy of the spike proteins, I was asking myself, what if there is, of course, it's not a spike, but because a spike protein, the name spike means that it's part of some fictitious imaginary virus, but maybe there is a toxic protein that is actually being produced in the body, not by the body, but by the nanotechnology or some synthetic biology in this nanotechnology. And this, I started researching this. And then that immediately led me to realize that if they can make one protein, they can make any number of proteins. So they can mix and match, and they can even make the proteins that Richard Hirschman is showing. And I want to show you this.
Okay.
So this is a structure in the Pfizer vial, and it's bubbling. And we can't see, because of the contrast, we can't see very well what's inside of here. I'm going to show you some other. This we already show. I already showed this. These are some of the things that grow on the microscope slide. This particular one doesn't seem to be bubbling. So there are also structures that are not just nanotechnology without synthetic biology. Here are some more of these very contrasty thick membranes. And so I asked, this is another one. This one does, you can see clearly here that this is bubbling, right? So this is these structures I didn't pay attention much initially, but now I'm paying a lot more attention. You can see this is bubbling, all this area,
Right.
right? So this to me, if I could have a better look inside, looks to me like a factory, a synthetic biology factory for some toxins that are secreted by this structure. And let's move on. I'll show you more. This again, we showed this.
Yes, I remember this one. It's freaky.
Again, not bubbling, but you don't want these in your blood, believe me.
Yeah.
Here is another such a structure, and I don't know what this is, but I suspect that this part here is part of the synthetic biology that I will show you in papers. And this is another what appears to be a biofilm. What is it doing inside the Pfizer vial? So this could be, for example, fungi, and there is. I'm getting reports from around the world that there is either opportunistic or deliberate infection with fungi
Yes.
in our blood, especially Aspergillus niger. This is another interesting thing, because here I actually do get a look inside this synthetic structure, and this doesn't look like nanotechnology. It looks like synthetic biology to me, but don't take my word for it. Let's go to this looks like to me like some an attempt to imitate a cell, right?
Yes,
Not
it
a human
does.
cell, right? So it looks like a cell, and the cell is secreting some bubbles, and we'll show, and again, some structures do not seem to be bubbling. And this one yet again is bubbling. And then it looks like a structure that maybe is discharging other matter, maybe part of itself as bubbles here that you can see. So all sorts of animals reside in these vials.
Yuck.
And this could also be I'm hypothesizing here a bit, because we know that the assembly and disassembly of these is related to electromagnetic signal or radiation. So many people could have structures such as this, and then upon some external command of electromagnetic 5G or 4G command, some of these structures could start breaking up and discharging material to the blood. And this is very scary indeed. And it could explain why we sometimes have a delayed effect of up to a year or maybe more between injection and injury or even death. And I just want to make one point before I go to show you some scientific papers, that this, if this is a synthetic biology cell, it doesn't have an energy production system of its own. So for its operation, for its synthesis, it would depend totally on external external energy sources.
What makes you say that?
Well, because, you know, if this was a bacterium, which it isn't, all cells basically have something called the mitochondria, which is an energy powerhouse of the cells. So this is a very interesting paper. It's called The User's Guide to Cell-Free Protein Synthesis. So if you, Maria, wanted to start manufacturing any protein, spike protein, what other proteins, this is a user's guide that teaches you what to do. And apparently, this is a very common technique, because this is how you manufacture proteins in a lab. You know, otherwise you would need bacteria such as E. coli to create proteins. But if you don't want to, if you want to do this in the lab, in a test tube, then this is a user guide that shows you what to do. Basically, what you're trying to do is take extracts, put this in some sort of reaction, and voila, you have protein expression, and you have purification, and then you end up with a test tube full of protein. This protein could be insulin, you know, to help diabetic patients, but it could also be some nasty protein or a number of proteins. So this is a very important term. It's called cell-free protein synthesis, or CFPS. Because what it means is you harvest something, and then you no longer need the cell. You can do it in a test tube. Okay, this is from the art of manufacturing proteins in the lab. And I can show you here that there are some companies here that are selling kits to do this. And I wouldn't say at home, but if you want to, this is one such company. It's called Biolabs. So they sell kits for, you know, it's a protein synthesis system.
Right.
Okay. So it's been done, and it's been done for a long time.
Yes.
Now this is not the interesting part yet, because this, what I'm showing you, is existing art. Again, when they what they're doing is they are extracting the contents from organisms, especially bacteria. And guess who is the number one star here? This is a table that shows cells which they are employing to produce these
E. coli.
And E. coli again emerges as the number one favorite. There are, and here are HeLa, which is a line of human cancer cells named after poor Henrietta Lacks. And this is not as efficient as the E. coli, right? Yes. And these are cancer cells that were not typical human cells. They are very special cells that lend themselves, the very sick cells that lend themselves more easily for producing protein. Still, they are not so successful as the E. coli, and there is even wheat germ from vegetation and so on. So basically, what you do here is you take a batch, you do something, and you get product rich output here, and this is the synthesis of proteins. I want to move on from here Okay, so no, just this chart is nice. Again, cell-free protein synthesis reaction, and so you put some DNA templates, interestingly, together with cofactors. Is this large enough? I can enlarge this a little bit.
Probably need it a bit bigger.
Okay, so you use DNA templates and some cofactors and substrates, and most important of all, energy and salt. So this will not work unless you energize it. How
Right.
can you energize it? Let us move to this paper to show you how you could potentially energize this. Because once you extract, it's called bacterial extracts or templates from extracted from bacteria, because bacteria know how to manufacture proteins, and you want that, the guts of the bacteria, but you don't want the bacteria cell as an organism, because that would be an organism, and you don't want this to become an industrial process independent of organisms. So you need to energize. Let me enlarge this too. Okay, so this paper is about physical stimuli responsive cell-free protein synthesis, and this describes how you could externally energize this reaction to create the protein synthesis. So they describe four methodologies. There is light, temperature, and here are our good old friends, electric and magnetic forces,
Right.
which could be combined as one in electromagnetic radiation. So this process doesn't work on its own. It needs energy because you are not getting energy production, which is typical of all cells. All cells produce their own energy through mitochondria. Here, you only get the you extract the protein synthesizer components, and you don't get the end results in the test tube is not capable of producing its own energy, so you have to produce it externally. And
So,
this
hence the push for 5G, hence the push for more of these frequencies around us, everywhere we turn and look.
absolutely. And as
Their
we
goal for
discussed,
synthetic biology would not be possible without it.
absolutely true. And even the nanotechnology would not work without it, because the self-assembly and the synthetic biology both need to be energized externally. And Maria, the interesting and the groundbreaking capability of 5G is to create very narrow beam forms that could be directed at single individuals, whereas previously there was the electromagnetic of 4G and 3G were so widespread. You could still do a lot with that, but if you want to really target a single individual and send the command to that synthetic biology component in this single individual, okay, start producing the toxin now, you could do that with 5G, and you couldn't do that with 4G before.
All right, so
And then,
I have questions for you on that. Is there anything else that you need to show us, or can I go into my questions?
Let me just show you this paper again. They show the whole process of how they use the CFPS, which is cell-free protein synthesis. Yes, there is one important thing. And table two, summary of technical. Guess, Maria, which is again their favorite in
E. coli.
producing these E. coli extract. And there is something called pure, but by far, E. coli emerges as the star of this synthetic biology show. They can easily manipulate it, culturing it is easy, and then they can extract it. But this is in a test tube. So how then, Maria, is this possible to make in a person's body? And this is the breakthrough. In an effort that we would expect, they say if we can produce this in a test tube in the lab, can reproduce this in nanotechnology in the body. And this is where synthetic biology meets nanotechnology, because this is micro-compartmentalized cell-free protein synthesis in semi-permeable microcapsules composed of these are, I think, are the membranes that I showed you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So this research deals exactly with that question of how to miniaturize this process so that it can be inserted into nanotechnology. So you have a DNA library, and it's interesting to note that these mRNA injections contain a lot of DNA. I'm not sure that all of the batches do, because we saw that there is a lot of variability, but we know that by the work of some people that if a batch contains RNA, it also contains DNA and contains plasmids, probably. And so this is how you take this thing and you perform an encapsulation. And this encapsulation can result in either a spherical or a tubular, like worm-like structure. And then you have a protein synthesis system, right? This is the semi-permeable membrane. And you have basically a reaction, some reactor inside your blood that is capable with the appropriate energy to excrete or secrete proteins. And it's not just one. You can select any DNA from your library, and you can...
Is it only DNA from your library, or is it also DNA that they're inserting?
The library means that they have their library somewhere,
right.
And they
yes.
can
okay.
come up with any DNA that they like and,
yeah.
and use it. This shows how this compartmentalization works. And then you get these semi-permeable membranes. So this is the scientific papers that specifically discusses the miniaturization process of how to push this as a synthetic biology weapon into nanotechnology.
Wow.
And then these things work together. Let me see if there isn't something else important. So does this remind you of the images that I showed earlier? I'm
yes.
sure it does.
Yes.
So, but it's important to remember that these don't need to be exclusively oval or sphere shapes. They could pack a whole lot of them into synthetic worms or filaments, and then you have an entire filament that can secrete something. I'm trying to, just to see if there is a... Okay, here's a lot of the bubbling stuff. So this bubbling immediately attracted me to this paper and this work. So now what I'm showing is not a clear proof. What I'm showing is a plausible explanation, and this plausible explanation is for why are we seeing a lot of proteins in people's bodies. This is a blood analysis microscopy, but it was taken as a photo from the computer screen, and I cannot say whose blood it is, but someone who seems to have in their blood this synthetic, what I interpret as a synthetic biology structure, and this is to me, it makes perfect sense that the inside is the extract from bacteria, but they come in different sizes and maybe different protein target proteins. And this is another image that show red blood cells with a lot of bubbling.
Yes.
Going on in between them. So this is when what happens when the synthetic proteins go into the bloodstream. This is something that we expect to see. And needless to say, this is an indication that whoever has this blood would be very ill.
So, Shamal, this is all incredibly fascinating. And I mean, it's just sort of confirming for me that we're on the right path in terms of discovering everything there is to know about this. And there's so much. The one question I did have for you was regarding the 5G single person weapon and then being able to produce a toxin within that person. What did you mean by that?
Well, 5G has a unique beam forming. They use what's called active phased array antenna, and they can direct a very narrow beam that can target a single individual in a crowd. That was not possible in previous generations of telecommunication. In 4G, you couldn't do that. You could still target many people at once, but if you want to target a specific individual in a crowd from afar, you can do that with 5G and the upcoming 6G.
And no one would
So,
know about it because it would be targeting perhaps this, it would be happening internally, right? So these toxins that are inside this person would be activated essentially by 5G
there are
as the
two.
weapon system.
So, in our two talks, I showed basically two possible mechanisms. The first one would be if you already have a capsule in your blood that contains toxins, you could then instruct it to open up and release the toxins quickly to the blood. And that's one possible mechanism. Another mechanism would be to energize some synthetic biology to start producing these toxins. So
Right.
these are two different mechanisms by which it could be done. I suspect there are other, of course, there is the communication with the chips or the electronic circuitry that's also done by 5G. So I suspect they have multiple pathways to communicate with our body to creating different effects.
And you're saying that perhaps these strange clots that people like Richard Hirschman and others are finding could be evidence of synthetic biology.
Absolutely. So I want to mention a distinguished person, German pathologist, Professor Arne Burkhardt. He's been researching what he calls the staining, finding damaged tissue in autopsies. He was not paying much attention initially to embalmers such as Richard Hirschman and the strange clots that they've been finding. And once he started to pay attention, it doesn't occur to him that this is yet a different protein, or in fact, a polymer, a chain of proteins that ends up as a rubbery clot. But when I looked at these proteins, I immediately recognized this is not blood, right? So this is like a
Yes.
sausage. It's
Yes.
protein and it's a polymer, a chain of proteins. And how can Arne Burkhardt thinks that this could be continuous damage to the walls of blood vessels that results in this almost secondary blood vessel within the first blood vessel. But I don't buy this because a permanent damage to the blood vessel would end up in a rupturing of an hemorrhage. And this is not what we're seeing.
No,
We
we're
are
seeing
seeing
it
people,
growing and growing and growing.
and no damage to the walls of the blood vessel. So, again, dear Professor Burkhardt, you should recognize that if they are capable of producing one protein, they are capable of producing many. And I think this is exactly what we're seeing there. And these some proteins are not toxic, just end up, polymerizing and clogging people's arteries.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about, Shimon, and I think, as I said to you, as I keep going down this path, I'm finding more and more evidence to suggest that this is actually what's happening to humans. It may also suggest explain why we're not able to wake people up. Are they already subjected to some sort of mind control that's beyond our understanding? Are their bodies going to continue getting sicker and sicker? And it's not just from the shots, it's actually beyond that now. And I mean, it's there are so many questions that need to be answered, but it certainly seems like we've figured out what the ultimate goal is, and the ultimate goal is the human 2.0. I mean, they told us this, but we're seeing it. And it's not a positive thing. This is hurting people. And the people that did this to us always had the intention to hurt us. And now we're seeing it at a mass scale. The problem is that in the hands of the wrong people, which it already is, this could kill off millions, billions of people. And they will do it. That's their plan. So, I mean,
This is
what
what
are.
they want to do, don't
Yes.
they? They want to decimate the human society, kill many people, and control the rest, don't they?
Correct. And this is the perfect mechanism to do it, really. I wonder, and this is a conversation we need to have as a follow-up, but if we're right about this, and I think we could be, is there any way to reverse that? Is there any way to get back to being a completely natural human?
That's a good question. So many people need to heal from toxicity at the moment, and the things that produce this toxicity are inside the body, and we need to know how to either disable them or to getting them out. Well, there are many protocols being sought. I would say that, in my opinion, it is very difficult to eliminate these, but still, people try things such as intermittent fasting or otherwise enhancing metabolism and autophagy to digest these toxins. I don't know how to get rid of these worms and filaments and ribbons. We are looking into things such as colloidal gold to maybe disassemble them.
Well, no, I know about that. I'm talking about something beyond that. I'm saying, okay, so people have got this technology inside of them, and yes, we're having some success with, I know, Dr. Anna EDTA chelation, and Dr. Nixon with colloidal gold, and Celeste thinks that may not be the answer. I mean, there are a lot of different people trying different things. I don't think Celeste is actually physically treating the people, whereas Dr. Nixon and Dr. Anna are. So I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but my point is, I'm talking about let's reverse human 2.0. How do we do that? This is the next, the next, remember how that the USA Today actually wrote an article about an interview that I did with Todd Callender, where he said that they have a new legal definition for these humans that have been altered called homobiogenesis. And USA Today said this doesn't exist, and we contacted Maria for comment and she didn't respond. Well, I can say they never contacted me for comment. That's a lie from USA Today. And I'd be happy to talk to them about everything that I found out should they wish to speak to me. But no, they're just interested in writing slander pieces and not actually speaking to me, like most of the fact checkers out there in the mainstream media outlets. So, I mean, this is Todd, when Todd Callender said that, and I immediately got attacked by multiple fact checkers, I thought, right, we're onto something. And here it is. Here it is. Human 2.0, synthetic biology. I really recommend that every single person that's in complete denial about the graphene oxide, the nanotech in these shots, in the skies, in the water, needs to really look at themselves in the mirror and think, am I being ignorant to the fact that this is going on? Because we need answers and we need them soon. Shimon Janowitz, thank you so much for your contribution to this investigation, this ongoing investigation. We really appreciate you, and we'll be praying that you recover, definitely. You and all the others that are unwell.
Thank you so much, Maria, for having me, and I hope to be here back and continue discuss the continuation of this research. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wow. Now more than ever, it is so important to prepare you and your family. Let me tell you, once this stuff starts coming out, they will shut us down. They desperately do not want the world to know about this plan for human 2.0. Yes, they might skim on it and so skim across it and say, oh, we're going to control the masses. And everyone goes, how are you going to do that? Well, this is how. This is so controversial, So share this information everywhere. And please, if you're in the United States, head to heavensharvest.com. Get yourself some emergency survival food for when they ultimately flick the switch. Because as soon as all alt media starts talking about this, it's game over for these people. Because this is what they don't want exposed. Again, this is why so many doctors deny it. Go to heavensharvest.com, use promo code Z for 5% off your order. Survival Supplies Australia for all of your survival needs. If you're in Australia, a special promotion using the link sat123.com/Maria on all of their products. This is alternate communications for when they do flick the switch that you'll be able to communicate with your loved ones. And finally, we've got a special promotion going this month with Stockman Steaks. If you use promo code Maria, 2 free rump steaks for all orders over $199.95 and 2 free T-bones for all orders over 400. Use promo code Maria and get yourself and your family some nutritious mRNA-free, antibiotic-free meat. Support the businesses that support independent media to keep going. And please, please, take it seriously. Prepare. As I said, once the rest of alt media gets wind of this and starts talking about it mass scale, it's game over and they don't want this information out. Share this video everywhere, and I'll see you later on this week right here on Uncensored.